A Pitlane Punters production.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pit Lane Punters podcast. We've got a great show for you lined up. The Erebus saga continues. Can you believe it? We can't hear on the Pit Lane Punters podcast, but we'll tell you all about that. The IndyCar push-to-pass saga at Penske continues, and we celebrate the life of Ayrton Senna 30 years after his tragic passing at San Marino Grand Prix all the way back in 1994. But joining me on the podcast, as always, is the boys, Anthony and Zach. G'day, lads. What's going on?
Oh, it's been a busy week for me, boys. I've started my new job and I'm absolutely loving it.
Absolutely fantastic. And I don't know, are you allowed to talk too much about who you're working for, what you're doing, or is that a trade secret?
No, I'll say it now. I'm working for one Neil Crompton and his airtime media business, doing lots of videography and editing of motorsport footage, which is a pretty fun job.
Oh, for sure. I can imagine. So you're no longer a punter, mate?
No,
you're
not
a pit
officially.
Lane professional.
Yes. We might have to rebrand the podcast if we all end up in that space. But no, I will be off to Perth in a couple of weeks, so I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely fantastic. Zach, how you been going, mate? Busy week for you?
Always is. Life of a uni student / part-time media professional.
Pit lane punter.
Well, yeah, exactly right. No, it is good to see Anthony doing stuff. And he's even found time to stitch up some of his mates for some very important videos, haven't you, Anthony? As he's got a mouthful of food. That's... You know what you were saying about him being a pit lane professional? He's not showing it.
Well, that reference went over my head, so yeah.
Well, let's just say that one of us makes an appearance in the official recap of the Rally of Canberra for Toyota Gazoo Racing Australia, and let's just say my headwear is not Toyota approved. And with that, I think we move right on.
Fantastic stuff. Well, hey, let's start where we normally start, supercars news, because there's been some pretty big news stories, I guess, this week. It's been going on all year, but we can't believe it. It's actually continuing. The Erebus saga continues with the potential sale of the team. It's come out this week. I mean, I know there was sort of rumours, but I guess it seemed to have a little bit more steam this week, didn't it, Zach?
Well, you say potential sale. I'm hearing definite sale is going to happen at some point this season, whether it's at the end of the season, maybe even before the season's out. Got to say, it's not a massive surprise given what's going on or what has gone on over the past 18 months with Erebus, all their success from 2023. And then all the chaos that's erupted this season regarding Brody Kostecki's contract status at the team, a whole bunch of major backers pulling out like Coca-Cola, Shaw and Partners, Southern Cross Truck Rentals. You can understand why Betty Klimenko would want out, because she's ticked every box she has to tick in supercars now as a team owner. She's got a team's championship, she's got a driver's championship, and of course 2017 they won the Bathurst 1000 with Dave Reynolds and Luke Yulden, so... not a massive surprise to me, but it just continues what's been a tumultuous start to 2024 for Erebus Motorsport.
Yeah, so bizarre, and I guess it's in terms of motorsport and what Betty has managed to achieve. Don't forget the 12-hour as well. So pretty much she's done everything I think she needs to do or ever wanted to do in Australian motorsport. So especially with all the stuff that's been going on, I'm not surprised she is looking to bow out either. But Barry Ryan, CEO, is he the CEO at the moment or the managing director anyway? He owns part of the number 99 wreck, does he not? So what does that mean? Is he sticking around? It was 99. Yes, 99.
I do imagine that he would stick around CEO with new owners, unless the new owners decide that they want to completely revamp the team. I mean, for all we know, Erebus could be sold, and they could very much not be Erebus for the start of next season if if or when the sale does come through. So the mail I'm hearing, it sounds like that it could potentially be an entirely new entity that buys Erebus Motorsport. I'm hearing that it's a Super 2 team that's the front runner at the moment to buy out Erebus Motorsport. I don't know any potential identity on who that team might be. Image Racing, they are the Erebus Academy team in Super 2, so whether perhaps it's Image Racing and Terry Wyhoon that kind of step up to take the place of Erebus, I'm not 100% sure. But there's a lot of teams there that could potentially make the jump up too. I think another name I've heard come up in conversation is Eggleston Motorsport potentially making the step up, a perennial front runner in Super 2. Of course, they have a Triple Eight link, so that could be interesting. But I think the reason that's sort of come into play in the last little while is because Paul Dumbrell's just announced that he's stepping down from a big CEO job that he was in line to take. That was a $1.25 million salary a year he was going to earn. And of course, Paul Dumbrell, former driver at Eggleston, won Super 2 with Eggleston, so perhaps he teams up with Eggleston to make the next step up into supercars full-time. There's a lot to play out.
I think it'd be cool to see Eggleston come into the Supercars Championship because they've been around the category for so long doing Super 2 that Rachel and Ben Eggleston have put so much time and effort into trying to develop some of these young guys, and I think it'd be cool for them, if they choose to then continue that growth but into their own team rather than having to give them away to other teams moving forward.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Like, I like scanning the comments online to see what people think, and I've heard a term called the Gold Coast Mafia come up. I don't know if that name means anything to you. I think it's more to do with maybe the Boost sponsorship sort of stuff, is my understanding of that, or reading through the lines of that. Which, if this is a chance for Peter Addison to get involved, it would be very sly business, would it not? Considering he's the one who set the fans loose on them in the first place, potentially reducing the appeal and the costs and the price to enter, reducing that asset. A bit of market manipulation.
It would be extremely on brand for Peter Addison to buy Erebus Motorsport in this fashion.
After saying he's never... And also it would make sense why he pulled the money from the rest of his programs, because he needs it to buy a supercars team.
Look, I think it's very unlikely that Peter Addison happened. I think he's very much at the bottom of the list for potential, or for people that Betty Klemenko probably want to sell to. And that's even if he's on the list in the first place. I'd be very doubtful for Peter Addison buying Erebus Motorsport. And I mean, we've seen that the Boost X, or the Mobile X NASCAR Cup Series program that Brody Kostecki was scheduled to compete in part-time this year, that seems to have fallen by the wayside now. So, look, I'd be very doubtful if Peter Addison was to make the step up and the transition into supercars team ownership.
Yeah, fair enough. Another name I saw kicking around was Paul Morris.
Well, I think plausible. He's done it before. I think back to the VIP Pet Foods days of Steve Owen, and even ran Russell Ingall and Greg Murphy in a program in 2010 off the top of my head. So, and the thing is, he's got Norwell Motorplex too. He's got that factory of young talent that he just keeps churning out, and it would give a young talent, I guess, sort of a direct pathway to supercars as opposed to being shipped off to someone like a Triple Eight or like a Tickford Academy, that kind of thing. So,
he'd get the pick of the bunch, wouldn't he?
Well, he would get the pick of the bunch. And, I mean, you look at all the young drivers coming through the sport nowadays, and not even on the supercars pathway, but the vast majority of them have had that Norwell touch about them, even if it's just a single driver training session. Like, a lot of them use Norwell, and, I mean, they've run Nash Morris Super 2 car the past two seasons. Of course, he's now off in Porsche Carrera Cup, but... yeah, I think definitely viable, but I do think probably not the most likely option.
Here's one for you. Roland Dain and Paul Morris get on quite well. Could you see Roland coming back in to team ownership away from Triple Eight and potentially joining forces with Paul Morris?
Well, I'd say no. But
Morris Dane Motorsport, MDM.
I'd highly doubt it. But then again, Paul Dumbrell was a shareholder at Triple Eight as well. And now there's rumours that he's going to take Eggleston into the main game. So, yeah, I think...
Plenty of rumours. And I guess that's all they are at this point, aren't they? We're just talking shop.
Well, we are exactly right. I guess that's kind of the beauty of the situation. We don't really know where it's going to end up. I mean, for all we know, maybe Betty decides to stay on. We don't know. Mm. So...
For sure.
Watch this space. It's going to play out over the coming weeks and months for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess talking about Erebus and keeping on that topic, we've spent a lot of time. They've had a lot of airtime on our podcast this season, haven't they? But there has been an announcement that who will be co-driving in that number one car come Enduro season time. Todd Hazelwood gets the nod, and the TFH higher sponsorship sticks on the number one car for the rest of the season, but only the number one car. Isn't that right, Zach?
Yes, it is only the number one car that TFH are going to sponsor for the remainder of the season. And you'd imagine with Todd Hazelwood bringing that TFH sponsorship to Erebus in the first place, you'd imagine that that's why he got the nod to drive alongside Brody Kostecki, which is a big opportunity.
It's a good shout for the mountain.
It is a good combination for the mountain. Todd's a very solid and capable pair of hands. He's probably not got the maximum one lap pace of the co-driver field that's so far confirmed for the season, but you don't really want that at Mount Panorama, and Todd is extremely reliable. He gets the job done, and he's got a lot more seat time in a supercar than the remainder of the co-driver field has so far this year. So I think that's going to be really interesting to watch, and it's also just been confirmed that Brody Kostecki is actually going to run as teammate to Todd Hazelwood at the next round of the National Trans Am Series at the Bend Motorsport Park at the end of this month too. So Brody Kostecki driving a Ford. Should we read into that a little bit? 2025 silly season, anyone? No, I think it's a very good combination. Of course, that leaves a question mark now about what are the stickers going to look like on Jack LeBrock's car for, at the very least, the short-term future. It was only a three-round deal for TFH Hire to sponsor both of the Erebus cars full-time. And of course, Jack LeBrock still awaiting official confirmation on who his co-driver is, although we do believe that it probably will be a reunion of last year's Matt Stone Racing endurance combination of Jack LeBrock and now twice defending Bathurst 6-hour winner Jaden Ojeda.
Interesting stuff. Any theories, Anthony, on who would be sponsoring that car?
Well, he does have a pretty big personal alignment with Bic, the stationary supplier that also does shaving stuff as well. So we could see the cars in a similar pattern to what they currently are with TFHI, but with Bic on the sides. But apart from that, that's really all I can think of. I doubt we would see Truck Assist come across, who are a big personal sponsor of his and NTI, but they're already on Ryan Wood's car. So I doubt they would come across to a second car that is in a second team.
And
for sure.
And of course, Truck Assist did decide to downsize their involvement in the sport to focus on WAU and not have any more cars. So I highly doubt they would jump back on board with Erebus Motorsport, I should say. Look, put it this way. I think Erebus Motorsport, they're going to have a lot of lighters in their garage, and they're also going to have shaved heads thanks to some wonderful Bic products, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I guess it's a bit different. They won't be drinking out of cans of Coke anymore. The old Bic lighter doesn't have the same vibe, does it?
No. I mean, unless they use the Bic lighters to burn every Coke, all the Coke branding that's around on other cars in amongst the supercars fraternity, mainly in Super 2.
Fair enough. Well, hey, we'll find out, I guess, looking forward. But talking about looking forward and moving forward, it would be remiss of us to not talk about the current calendar saga that is unfolding in supercars. A little bit early this year, the calendar saga. And there's been a few bits and pieces, a few things coming out, and some interesting articles that have come out today and this week, hasn't there, Zach, about, I guess, why... Oh, well, I guess for context, for a long time, we've complained about not enough racing. Shane Van Gisbergen cited as one of the reasons why he left. A lot of drivers cracking the sads because there's not enough racing. And frankly, fans as well cracking it about not enough racing. There's a lot of street circuits around. We're not going to some of our traditional homes like Winton, QR, Phillip Island anymore. And I guess this is a good time to have that conversation and try and contextualise why that's happening. What do you think, Anthony?
Well, we say there's not a lot of street races around, but this year we're only owned three of them.
Yeah, right. I guess more traditionally, yeah.
Traditionally, we have had sort of potentially up to half the calendar has been sort of those street circuits in years gone by. But
I guess this is year, the fan sentiment is what but the fan sentiment can be a bit old, to be fair.
It can
Some people are still complaining about the Fox deal.
Well, yeah. But I think street circuit racing is so good for the sport because you can't make a mistake, otherwise you're in the fence. And I think that's part of why it has such a big appeal to all the fans. The problem is, though, coming off the back of COVID and people were unsure about how to do it safely, and it sort of fell by the wayside, especially with Newcastle. And we won't get Zach and I started on that again because we all know how that ends. But this year, the only street circuits that supercars are building, obviously the Grand Prix, mainly street circuit as well, but that's an event built by Formula One that supercars is a support category on. It's only Townsville, Adelaide and the Gold Coast. The rest are all permanent circuits. So there's not a lot of money coming in to supercars to help pay for the extra races, as we're about to also discuss.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess for context, the broadcast deal, and I don't know if we've mentioned this on before on the podcast or not, which is the Fox Sports KO deal, the Murdoch deal, which says that they'll pay supercars for up to 12 rounds or 12 or 15 rounds on the calendar. Is that right, Zach? And anything in between, supercars are going to have to find the money themselves for it. Because Fox isn't going to, they're only going to pay either 12 or 15. They're not going to pay 13. They're not going to pay 14. Is that right? Am I getting the understanding of that financial situation, that deal?
Yeah. So if supercars run 13 or 14 rounds, then Fox will still pay for 12 anyway. So
yeah,
that's kind of the interesting part about that. And the broadcast rights, they're coming up in conversation too, because I believe the current deal is up at the end of next season. So already a bit of talk about when that broadcast deal, or who might potentially be in the game for the next broadcast deal. The future of streaming sport, that's another huge thing. I mean, the British Touring Car Championship, they've just started a deal to stream all of their races globally on TikTok, of all places. So
really? I didn't hear about that. That's crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, there's a lot to play out with broadcast rights as well as the calendar. It's all going to simmer away in the background. I think the race consortium, the owners of supercars, they're about to have meetings with team owners about what the future of the series might look like from a calendar point of view, which I think you're going to touch on soon, Josh. But there's a lot to play out behind the scenes in supercars for sure.
Yeah, and I will follow on from what you were saying, and I will talk about it because this kind of blew my mind. It's only something I sort of learned today. It was a credit where credit's due. It was an article by Speed Cafe that I was reading that really highlighted something that I didn't really know, and it kind of made everything make sense in terms of the calendar. That and one of the things I want to talk about in race is part of the TRC. I nearly said TCR. Part of the TRC is that supercars is obliged to hold a minimum of 12 events per season, which aligns with the Fox broadcast, and so those things are in an agreement, in alignment, in terms of finance and budgetary and everything. But for each event over the allotted, between that 12 and 15 range, well, every event over 12 events, supercars has to pay each team or each car or each TRC owner, I should say, an extra $60,000 per race. And that adds up to be it adds up to be $1.44 million per event, which now I understand why there is this gap in the calendar and why it's so short. And like, it's only 12 races. I understand why that magic number exists now. And I understand how they'd have to dump three extra races that Fox would be able to cover that extra, what, 4 point something million? I'm just quickly looking at that, $4.2 million. So that makes a lot of sense why we are having this issue. And the fans don't know that. The fans don't care, really. They just go, they're not racing enough. I'm watching NASCAR now. That's why all the good drivers are leaving.
And I'd imagine that this probably would come up in the conversation for the next broadcast deal as well, saying that if you want more racing, we need more money from you. So, yeah, potentially that comes up in conversation. I mean, the three of us, we aren't big-wig TV executives, so we're not exactly privy to these conversations. But
of course.
I mean, who knows?
But it's worth it's worth contextualizing, though, because people who listen to our podcast, they probably would not know that nitty-gritty detail of why things are the way that they are. Sorry, Anthony, I cut you off, mate.
I was just about to say, I may end up being privy to some of these talks in the background, not that I'll be able to disclose any of them, but I will have a bit more of an understanding of what's happening in the background.
Welcome to the club of not being able to disclose all these conversations, Anthony.
Yep.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. Watch this space. And we talked about, well, actually, the other thing was, and I guess where the street circuits thing was relevant, is generally street circuits are paid for by state governments. So, therefore, the budget is balanced in that regard, where when people go, why aren't we going to Queensland Raceway anymore? Why aren't we going to Winton? Why aren't we going to Phillip Island? Well, Phillip Island was notorious for being one of the most expensive supercars races to hold, because they had to pay the track hire to the private company, which I think is a trucking company, big transport company.
Yeah, Lindsay Fox owns Phillip Island.
Phillip Island, yeah. And he doesn't really care about the motors, like supercars in that way, I guess. Just pay me or don't come sort of thing. And it didn't really pull a massive crowd, because it's very hard to get to Phillip Island. There's not public transport from Melbourne.
Yeah, and I mean, you say that, I mean, I'm sure supercars would love to go to those heartland tracks if they could make it all stack up. And I mean, I've heard rumours that potentially Queensland Raceway could be a season opener next year, maybe. I don't know how true those rumours are. But I have seen those rumours flying around. An interesting way to open a season, going from Newcastle to Mount Panorama to Ipswich. I mean,
to the paperclip.
Look, it's a good racetrack, but look.
Mate, send him to Winton. Send him to Benalla.
Yeah, I mean,
but if Tony Quinn puts the lights in at QR, you could open the season with a night race.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get why you wouldn't start it at Sydney Motorsport Park and then have a night race in Queensland later in the season, when it's a bit cooler for your interstate teams, and you get them a part of that warm summer or midwinter swing where we go up north.
I mean, I guess it all depends on whether or not the Destination New South Wales deal still stands for next season, because I've seen conflicting reports on whether or not the season has to start in New South Wales for next season or not. So I guess that's where it all depends. But I mean, you talk about Tony Quinn maybe installing permanent light facilities. I've heard, I mean, it's not the only place that's going to get permanent light facilities. I think Hidden Valley's going to get permanent light facilities soon as part of a big upgrade to that precinct up in Darwin. They're talking about potentially putting in permanent light facilities out at Wanneroo as well, out in Perth, because the WA, they're getting a big boost in motorsport funding as well. So the conjecture is whether or not that's going to look like permanent light facilities, or instead they focus their energy on building a street circuit in Perth itself, based around Optus Stadium and the Crown Casino there. So, there's a lot of
double header in WA.
There is a lot of talk about a lot of investment in Australian motor racing facilities, which is a fantastic thing for the sport.
Yeah, for sure. And did WA put much money? Do they pay for supercars to go to Wanneroo? Is that a government-funded deal? Is that a tourism deal over there?
I'm not 100%.
There would be some tourism money involved with it, but not as much as you would get for a street circuit race.
Yeah, for sure. Right, well, that pretty much covers all the supercars news I had. Shall we move on to Formula One?
Yes, because there's a lot happening.
There is a lot. Well, first, it would be remiss of us not to sit and reflect on and celebrate the life of Ayrton Senna. Unfortunately, it's the 30th anniversary of the terrible weekend in Imola in 1994. Roland Ratzenberger also passed away in a practice session. Boys, I know you were too young. You never saw the guy race. I'm too young as well. I never saw the guy race. But tell you what, it's quite impressive watching a few of his highlights over the years.
If you ask me, he's the best to have ever done it in Formula One, Ayrton Senna. What can you say about him that hasn't already been said? He was just a magician behind the wheel of a car, wasn't he? It doesn't matter if it was turbocharged, it was normally aspirated. He just had this way of driving and just such a ruthless mentality behind the wheel as well. It's little wonder he won 3 world championships. It's little wonder he won 65 pole positions. And I mean, he did this all in 10 years in Formula One. Like, you can imagine the battles that he and Michael Schumacher would have had that fateful weekend not happened. But I mean, there's always that talk about whether or not it's appropriate to talk about if there is such thing as a greatest of all time in Formula One, because every single era is so different to each other. And I'm not discrediting that for a second, but you look at the guys who Senna had to beat and did beat routinely throughout his 10 years. Like, he had to beat Alain Prost, he had to beat Nigel Mansell, he had to beat Nelson Piquet. There's probably a million other names that you can throw into the mix as well. Like, probably the most talented and credentialed era of Formula One driver was in that time when Ayrton Senna was at his peak, and he beat them all just absolutely resoundingly. And sometimes he did some truly phenomenal and freaky driving performances as well. I think the first time he won his home Grand Prix in Brazil in 1991, he drove the last 10 laps only with sixth gear. I mean, the gearbox had let go, his body was failing him, and he still managed to do it. And oh, by the way, it was raining too, and he was on slicks. So, and then of course, there's Donington 1993, when he went from fifth to first on lap one alone and ended up absolutely demolishing the field. Monaco 1988, he beat Alain Prost in qualifying in an identical car by 1.5 seconds. I could go on and on, and I probably shouldn't, but yeah, the best to ever do it.
And boys, you boys are lucky enough to have a little piece of his memorabilia sitting in your respective houses, apartments.
Yes, I was actually going to mention that. We're not promoted by them whatsoever, but Lego came out, and I actually didn't realise or put two and two together until I saw the date come up, and I was like, oh, snap. Lego released a little, I just dropped my book, I guess it was about a roughly 1/13 scale, I think, in the end, Zach. A Lego car of the MP44, the famous car where that one, was it 96% or something of all races that season behind with him and Alain Prost behind the wheel?
Won 15 of 16 Grands Prix in the 1988 season, and it came about 1.9 laps away from clean sweeping the season until, unfortunately, Senna was wiped out by a backmarker at Monza. Within 2 laps of the checkered flag when he was well out in front. Ultimately, that became a Ferrari 1-2 led by Gerhard Berger with Michele Alboreto in second, mere weeks after Enzo Ferrari had passed away. So, the McLaren MP44, truly iconic car, a gorgeous race car.
And a nice little Lego piece as well.
It is. It really is, actually. What else can you say? Senna and McLaren with that iconic Marlborough livery. Probably the most iconic combination in Formula One history, you probably have to say. What more can you say? And I mean, whilst we're talking about Imola 1994 too, it'd be remiss of us not to mention also 30 years since Roland Ratzenberger unfortunately passed away following an accident in qualifying. For that race the day before, Senna had his accident too. Sort of gets forgotten about because, of course, Ayrton Senna being Ayrton Senna. But, Roland, only his third Grand Prix, would have been his second start had he qualified, driving for the Simtek team that year, where he was teammates with the Australian David Brabham that season as well. So a bit of a journeyman, Roland. He did some stuff. He drove in touring cars. He made a Bathurst 1000 start in 1987 for Schnitzer BMW. When the World Touring Car Championship came out. So definite connection there with Australia. But, we'd be remiss of us not to mention Roland as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I didn't actually know that he made a Bathurst 1000 start. So there you go. We're learning everything here on the Pit Lane Punters podcast.
That's what Zach does. Provides us with all the knowledge. His statistical stats man. Brain.
He's the stats man. The man with the stats. And on the note, too, that I didn't realise that it was this year as well, I wrote an article about that Lego car, actually.
And it would be remiss of us not to give it a bit of a plug, because I gave it a read, and it was a very nice read, Josh.
So, oh, thanks, well mate. Considering I'm not known as the writer out of us three. I try very hard not to write, but it turned out okay. And if you're thinking about buying the Lego car, go have a read of it. We'll share it up on our Instagram at Pit Lane Punters.
I did buy the car.
Did you?
It's not for me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay, that's true. Fair enough. Yeah. Thank you, boys.
I bought half the car.
Well, yeah, we bought half each, Josh, but. I was the one who physically purchased it from the shop and was like, I have it in my hands and I know I cannot build it.
Fair enough. Well, maybe you should get yourself one, mate. They're great. But talking about things that are great, F1 in Miami. What do you reckon? That's coming up this weekend, boys, and there's been some big news around it. The most annoying one for me has been the shit blue Ferrari livery.
And Josh, you're passionate about this. You absolutely hate it.
I just hate Ferrari half-ass and stuff. Like, honestly, the suits, awesome. Full-blown retro. I just think they must have traded their strategy team for their livery design team.
Well, it just looks like it's a bit of a special livery to celebrate the new Hewlett-Packard sponsorship that Ferrari have now with the blue logos, don't you reckon?
Is that what it's for?
No, it's definitely not what it's for, but the Hewlett-Packard logos are definitely blue, and I believe they're now title sponsors of Ferrari. So now I believe they're known as HP Scuderia Ferrari, if I'm not mistaken.
Are they actually? Oh, no. Oh, no.
Ferrari has a title sponsor.
Yes, they do.
Well, blow me down.
It's not a tobacco sponsor either. It's an absolute miracle. Yeah, I mean, Miami coming up this weekend, so time to get in our obligatory congratulations, Max Verstappen.
Get a boy, Max.
Hang on, I'm going to be over there and I'm going to sun myself on one of the boats in the fake marina.
I'm going to jump in the water. It's going to hurt, but I'm going to jump in.
I'm just looking at this HP sticker. And I thought the last time... Is HP an American company?
Yes. I think I might know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I was going to say the last time an American company with the blue logo with a white background went to Scuderia Ferrari and was like, hey, we want to throw you some money, they gave him the middle finger. So
okay, I don't know where you're going with this then.
Oh, the old Ford versus Ferrari thing.
Yeah, no, I'm with you now. I'm with you now. No, yeah. I was thinking more about 10 years ago in IndyCar, Simon Pagenaud running a HP livery for Schmidt-Peterson.
No. I was more talking about last time, an American company with the blue logo went and knocked on the door of Maranello.
Or if you want to go real nerd spec, I believe the last time HP was seen in Formula One, I believe they were a sponsor of BMW Williams back in the early 2000s with Ralph Schumacher and Montalbán Montoya at the helm.
Yeah. Oh, I just don't rate it. I just don't rate that Ferrari livery.
No, but whilst Ferrari are making awful liveries, RB, have they made a good livery?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a vibe, isn't it?
It gives off massive Miami Vice vibes, I reckon.
Yeah, for sure. Well, look, let's just say if a Formula One livery was like Yas at a music festival, it would be that livery.
Well, look, if Daniel Ricciardo is going to underperform, at least he can look good doing it.
That's right. That's
true. Oh, wow. I'm only seeing it for the first time. I hadn't seen it yet, and I actually quite like it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good.
You look great getting knocked out in Q2.
Yeah,
it gives off almost those sort of monochrome type. Sorry, not monochrome, but the chrome designs that reflect the color depending on which angle you look at it. That certain road cars that people get wrapped. That's what it reminds me of. But no, I quite like it.
Well, I think Zach, if they get knocked out in Q2 and Q1. They're just being nice because they've done such a great job. They're just being nice to the artists because it's standing still longer for people to look at and appreciate.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong. As long as it's not standing still with a corner ripped off it, I think that'll be a win for RB.
Or an Aston Martin up the rear end of it.
Well, yes.
I was going to say, does Daniel Ricciardo have words to Lance Stroll this weekend in the paddock?
No, I think Scotty James plays mediator between the two parties, and I believe we're all going to forget about it.
Get Strolled. He's going to play mediator? Yes, I know he's dating Stroll's... I know he's married to Stroll's sister, but surely you can't like the bloke after he's done that to your best mate.
Well, I mean, does anyone really like in-laws?
Yeah, all right.
I was about to say, speaking as someone who doesn't have any.
Yeah, anyway, moving on. Big news as well. The Andretti saga continues with the US Congress writing a formal letter to Formula One asking, yo, bro, what up with that? What's up with that?
Can this story get any weirder?
It's an odd story.
You know what?
A GM badged Renault engine.
You know what it screams? It's like, oh, you know what? F1 won't let me. I'm going to go talk to mum and dad and I'm going to get them to sort it out.
American capitalism, folks.
Just buy Haas. They're already an American team.
Just buy them out. Haas are about to go bankrupt if Gunther has his way, I think.
That is true. Actually, that's a fantastic segue because that is on my list. So that Andretti thing, that was the story, basically. They're not getting their way, so they've gone to mum and dad, and the Congress has written, Pauline Hanson, please explain note. Gunter Steiner is suing Haas. I saw the headline. Why is he doing it?
I believe that Haas haven't paid him out in full yet after being released. That there are some bonuses that have gone AWOL. And Gunter would very much like his money, please, and thank you.
And he ain't Kimi Raikkonen.
Well,
he wants it all.
Well, no. Sure, why not? I think Andretti should come knocking on the door.
Yeah? Well, at least we might have a half-decent competitive team, because Haas is just a parts bin team, really, isn't it?
Well...
A Ferrari parts bin team.
Well, yes, and I think they're going to become a bit of a Ferrari... young driver farmhouse again with the news that Nico Hülkenberg is on his way at season's end and now joining Sauber and Audi. So I think that paves the way for a young Brit by the name of Oliver Behrmann to come in full time and experience a F1 car that's not quite as good as a factory Ferrari, unfortunately.
That's very exciting stuff. And also, I'm not surprised that Hülkenberg has moved to Sauber considering Audi has moved their ownership to 100%. Originally, it was only going to be 75%, but they are fully taking over the team. And it's not surprising that they put a German in because it just kind of makes commercial sense in my mind. Now, here was something. I thought Sainz had signed a pre-contract to Audi like 2 or 3 years ago when they first announced the project coming in. And no one is talking about it, and I don't know why. And it's all about where he's going at the end of this year. And I know he's got to go somewhere at the end of this year, but it almost feels like that I've been like, I'm on a different planet with that sort of news. Am I going crazy? Or he did sign a pre-contract with Audi for 2026.
Well, I tell you what, if I'm Carlos Sainz's management, I'm getting my affairs into order and I'm finding him a seat quick smart. Cause if he's not careful.
Yeah, of course.
If he's not careful, the music's going to stop and Carlos isn't going to have a drive.
If the only man to have won a Grand Prix other than a Red Bull since 2022?
Yeah. I believe so, yeah. I mean...
He deserves to be on the grid
Sure. No, stand corrected. George Russell won at Brazil in 2022 for Mercedes.
I think that was the last time that someone won other than
Carlos Sainz or a Red Bull, yeah. But, I mean, where does Carlos go? Does he really want to go to Audi and potentially waste the prime years of his career at a team that won't be up to speed yet? Does he go to Mercedes where he really looks like he could only be a stopgap solution before Max Verstappen comes in from 2026 onwards on stupid amounts of money? Does he go to Red Bull where he plays second fiddle to Max Verstappen again? I think Carlos holds all the cards to the F1 silly season at the moment and... I don't know where he's going to end up, honestly.
Well, you mentioned Max Verstappen at Red Bull. I don't reckon that's going to happen. Mercedes are going to throw the kitchen sink at him this weekend in Miami, by all reports, and a whopping with a whopping contract that is worth $240 million Australian dollars for a single year.
Yeah, which is more than they would pay Lewis Hamilton for a season.
I believe it's...
Lewis Hamilton currently, I believe, is on about $75 million Australian dollars a year. And I don't know what that equates to in euros, which a lot of the teams work off. But the deal for Max is reportedly 130 million euros a year.
Well, I mean, yeah, the latest chapter in the Red Bull house of cards crumbling because the news has also been made official that their design guru, Adrian Newey's out the door early next season as well. So changing of the guard potentially on the cards at Red Bull, especially if they lose Max Verstappen. Does Verstappen go where Newey goes, or vice versa? Does Newey go where Verstappen goes? Because, I mean, I think Adrian's kind of figured out how to make a car for Adrian. Adrian's figured out how to make a car for Adrian Newey. I'd like to think he would have. Adrian's figured out how to make a car for Max Verstappen, it would seem, in the past few years, for sure. But, I mean, I think it's also a very valid option. Perhaps Adrian calls it a day, because let's not forget, he's been in the sport continuously since 1988. Since he designed his first car, the March 881, for Ivan Capelli and Maurizio Gugelmann, for the 1988 season, that was arguably the second best of the normally aspirated cars that year in the final year of turbo regulations, at least until 2014. So, a lot to play out in Formula One silly season as well. It seems to be just across the world a very silly season for 2025.
Well, I still think Adrian Newey's going to another team. We were all talking about it over lunch in the office today, and we're all certain that he's going to end up at Ferrari because he's been on the record to say that he wants to work with Ferrari. So I wouldn't be surprised if he has to take a year of gardening leave, as it is known as in the industry, and not be with a team or anything. But you can bet your bottom dollar that his year of gardening leave, he will still be sitting at home and designing a new Ferrari for the 2026 regulations.
I don't... Look, as much as it's the most likely thing to happen, there's part of me that doesn't want it to happen either, because Adrian Newey is so incredibly deserving of exiting the sport on the highest note. Because for decades now, he's been the mastermind behind so many dominant forces in Formula One. Williams in the early to mid-1990s, that was Newey. McLaren in the late 1990s, that was Newey. Red Bull, basically forever since Red Bull first became a thing in Formula One. I think 2007 was his first year at Red Bull. Adrian Newey. So, and part of me just worries that reputation could come crumbling a little bit at Ferrari if he does go there. And as much as he probably will design a great car, Ferrari, they're probably not going to get the most out of it. Charles Leclerc's got a mistake or two in him, and Lewis Hamilton...
He loves writing off a car, doesn't he?
Well, Lewis Hamilton's not the driver he once was, and I will stand by that statement for forever and a day. And then, of course, you got the small matter of Ferrari strategists being, well, you know, Ferrari strategists. So it will be interesting to see where Adrian Newey ends up, for sure.
Yep, 100%. Well, talking about fast cars, let's head over the States to NASCAR. There's not a heap of news here, but it is worth mentioning that Cam Waters is going to make his second truck series start at the Cookie Cutter in Kansas, in the tradie number 66 again. That's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, it will be. And Fox Sports and KO picking up the rights to that race as well, which I believe will follow F1 action in Miami immediately. So that's going to be a bit of a smorgasbord of motorsport action for what I believe will be Saturday morning Australian time, off the top of my head.
Yeah, fair enough. And it's worth mentioning, I know we mentioned a little bit earlier, but it looks like Gostecki's not going to be going back to the States at all this season. A weekend off for Shane Van Gisbergen, and we won't see him back on track till Darlington next week, is my understanding. And that's all I got in NASCAR news. Shall we move on to another major category in the States, Zach, which I know you've got plenty to say?
Oh,
it's IndyCar.
Where do we begin with IndyCar, boys? Probably one of the more controversial and tumultuous weeks in recent IndyCar history this past week.
Do we start with Scott McLaughlin being disqualified from an event a month ago, or do we start with him winning? Where do we start?
I think we start with the former, Anthony, because that leads very nicely into a point I'd like to make about his weekend at Barber. Team Penske got caught with their pants down at St. Petersburg. A push-to-pass irregularity found on all three cars. Push-to-pass in IndyCar, basically it's exactly what it says on the tin. You press a button on the steering wheel, it gives you a 50 horsepower boost, and you can use that from anywhere between 150 to 200 seconds in a road or street course race in IndyCar competition. Now, the push-to-pass rules, you can't use push to pass immediately off a start or restart. You got to wait till you get to the alternate start finish line, which is effectively the timing line that IndyCar use in qualifying, which is just prior to pit lane to pit entry. So that way you don't have to do an in lap after you set a fast lap in quali. You can do a fast lap and dive straight into the pits without doing a slow down lap. So basically, you can't use push to pass off a restart until you get to that alternate start finish line the first time round. Then you can use push to pass willy nilly until another full course yellow comes out and you repeat the cycle, essentially. Team Penske, we're doing some testing of IndyCar's brand new hybrid system, which has been controversial and much delayed in the off-season. And according to Team Penske officials, they forgot to remove a line of code from the push-to-pass mapping system. And all three drivers, being Joseph Newgarden, Scott McLaughlin, and Will Power, they had access to push-to-power throughout the entirety of the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg to open the IndyCar season. And as it turned out, Newgarden won the race. McLaughlin finished third. Will Power finished fourth. So a good day for Team Penske. Of course, we left St. Petersburg and we all thought, hey, everything's hunky-dory. Team Penske flogged everyone and that's just the way it went. We got to the Grand Prix of Long Beach. We got through all of practice. We got through all of qualifying. We got to the morning warm-up on the Sunday of the Long Beach Grand Prix, which is the second race of the season. And about, I think, 2 months... 1 month after Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, and then IndyCar found something in the telemetry from Team Penske, and that sort of tweaked something, and they then went back and had a look at Team Penske's telemetry from St. Petersburg, and they found that Newgarden and McLaughlin had used push-to-pass illegally, and that they were eventually disqualified from the race, from first and third respectively. But Will Power, although he had illegal access to the push-to-pass, he didn't use the push-to-pass illegally, so he was only docked 10 championship points, but he got to keep his finish, which eventually became second with two of the three cars ahead of him disqualified, and Pato O'Ward, the Mexican for Arrow McLaren, ended up winning the race, inheriting the race win from P2. So, yeah, that's extremely controversial.
It's pretty big, long-winded. It's a lot going on, a lot of politics involved.
There's a lot of politics involved, especially when you stop to consider Roger Penske is the owner of the series.
Of the Indianapolis 500, Indianapolis racetrack as well.
Yes.
But it's all come, like, they've all put it behind him. I know Scott McLaughlin had to put out a statement. The team put out a statement about it. But he's come out on the weekend and he's won. He's defended his win because he won at a Barber last year, I believe. And he's won it again this year in pretty good fashion. He looked good all weekend.
Well, I mean, yeah, a very tough weekend for Team Penske. They had to come and fight back. Interesting that Team Penske didn't release a uniform statement for all three drivers, but all three drivers were left to their own devices to make their own statements. Scott McLaughlin was the first one to release his own press release, and he said, yep, I'll put my hand up. I screwed up. I didn't follow the rules, and I'll accept the punishment. All well and good. Will Power made his statement, and he said, yeah, well, I just followed the rules and didn't use the push-to-pass button anyway, so I'm all good, which is a bit interesting. Joseph Newgarden, on the other hand, he didn't release a statement, but he decided to do a press conference instead at Barber Motorsports Park in the lead-up to the
went
event.
Full American.
Yeah, and basically he said, look, I'm not a cheat, which Joseph Newgarden used more push to pass than any of the other Team Penske drivers did that race. So read into that what you will.
If you ain't first, you're last.
Well, yes. yeah, there's a lot we could go into about this, but yeah, Scotty Mac did what he always seems to do whenever he faces adversity, and that is he comes out later on and he lets his driving do the talking. Pole position for him.
Digs deep.
And he dominated the race, and we've seen it here in Australia before, haven't we? I mean, Newcastle 500, 2017, threw away the unlosable championship, comes back in 2018 and wins his first championship. Bathurst 2019, race-fixing Fabian Coulthard, Debris, yada, yada, yada. He comes back in 2020 and just keeps on winning, right? So we've seen this before in Australia from Scotty Mac. Like, in the face of adversity, he stands up and he lets his driving do the talking as well. And worth noting as well, Will Power finishing second. Team Penske 1-2. Joseph Newgarden was nowhere all weekend, which is a bit interesting. And I think that this really has got to Joseph Newgarden, this whole thing. I think it's really rattling around in his head, and all of the scrutiny has, I think it's got to him. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that affects Joseph heading into the next two races at the Indy Grand Prix and then the big one, the 108th running of the Indianapolis 500 at the end of May.
But it was, whilst it was all sunshines and roses for Scott McLaughlin, one of the Barber Motorsport mannequins had not so good of a weekend and needs hand surgery.
Yes. Now, this is going to be an interesting one to explain. So for those of you...
Well, you got less than 5 minutes, so...
For those of you who don't know about Barber Motorsport Park, it is affectionately known as the Augusta of motor racing. Of course, Augusta, the golf course that hosts the Masters. Beautifully presented. And the track owner is a little bit eccentric, so he's got all of these wacky art installations all around the place. I think there's a massive spider on the inside of one corner, which I think the corner is effectively known as Charlotte's Web. Don't quote me on it. And one of the key features was this mannequin tied to a bridge on one of the fastest points of the track. It was tied up in 2016, and the mannequin is effectively known as Georgina. Now, according to circuit law, Georgina would remain tied to the bridge until she found her one true love, at which point she would effectively drop from the bridge and into, I guess, the path of her one true love. So congratulations to Pietro Fittipaldi from Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing. Good choice from Georgina, by the way. Brazilian, of course, last name Fittipaldi. Why not? Unfortunately, Luca Giotto, on the other hand, he didn't take too kindly to this and promptly decided to run over Georgina's hand, at which point it promptly shattered into oblivion and brought out a full course caution.
Right. Yes, yeah, so that's quite... I tell you what, that sort of stuff would not fly in Australia. It would just not fly. It's just so American, and I love it.
Well, it nearly didn't fly in America because it very nearly derailed Scotty Mac's strategy, and it very nearly cost him a race win, which would have very much kicked off a can of worms, I think. But it's all well and good, and Scotty and Georgina have kissed and made up. They had their photo taken with each other at the end of the race.
I did see that, yeah.
Well, with, of course, Scotty Mac's partner's blessing, I'd like to imagine. Of course, dad-to-be, Scott McLaughlin, later on this year, which is exciting news. So, yeah, Scotty Mac's got some really good momentum heading into the month of May, and I think Scotty Mac could be on for his first oval win at the end of the month. Just a little bit of a prediction there. And another story I want to very quickly touch on in IndyCar, Arrow McLaren, a shuffle in the driver lineup for them. David Malukas, the young American rookie, was the young American, not rookie, I should say, but a very talented young American. He was signed to the team from Dale Coyne Racing in the off-season, a very, very much hyped move for David. Unfortunately, he broke his wrist pre-season in a mountain biking accident. He's unfortunately had to miss, he's missed every race so far this season, the first four races, the 3 points paying races at St. Petersburg, Long Beach and Barber, and the non-championship race at Thermal in California. Unfortunately, missing those four races, it has triggered a release clause, is believed to have triggered a release clause in his Arrow McLaren contract. and Zach Brown has let him go before having even turned a wheel in a McLaren IndyCar.
That's unlucky.
Very unlucky. Very a mixed reception. A lot of fans very disgruntled because David is a very, very popular figure in the IndyCar paddock. And unfortunately, yeah, just a freak coincidence. And unfortunately for David, it's resulted in him being let go by McLaren, which you can fully understand, right? Because a race team is a business at the end of the day, and they need to make sure that they have someone who they can call upon. And unfortunately, David hasn't physically been able to do that. We're not sure what the future of that car is now. It has been shared between Callum Ilott, former IndyCar racer, former Ferrari Academy driver, who's now racing in World Endurance Championship full-time in a factory Porsche, and also the reigning Formula 2 champion, Teo Pourchaire, who's done the last two rounds at Long Beach and Barber Motorsports Park, and has done a really solid job, actually. So I think what we're looking at is potentially Callum Ilott and Teo Pourchaire will be doing a split season for the balance of this IndyCar season, in amongst their other commitments. Of course, Callum doing World Endurance Championship and Teo Pourchaire doing a full season in Japanese Super Formula at the moment. So interesting to see what McLaren will do with their number six car, of course, alongside Pato O'Ward in their number five car and Alexander Rossi in their seven car.
Interesting times at McLaren. And yeah, kind of lost a bit of respect on that. If you're a business, you got insurance against this sort of stuff, a big business like McLaren, so it's a bit rough on their behalf. But I guess force majeure has played a part in this contract thing by the looks of that. Yeah. Anthony, any closing thoughts, mate? Because that's just about all the time we have.
It is all about the time we have, and no real thoughts for me. Enjoy the weekend wherever you are and whatever motorsport you choose to watch.
Thanks, Anthony. I think that's a great note to end on. Zach, Anthony, thank you so much for your time, lads, and I'll see you next week.
Sounds like a plan.
You've been listening to the Pit Lane Punters podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, follow, and ring the notification bell wherever you get your podcasts. And if you get a spare chance, leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us in the algorithm. And now, exclusive to Spotify listeners, we've unlocked the Q&A function. So if you have a question about the podcast, how we make it, or just have any motorsport questions in general, we'd love to hear from you, we'd love to answer them, and we'd love to engage with you. That's it from us. See you next time on the Pit Lane Punters podcast.